I'm here speaking with Mary Beth Harrell, congressional candidate in District 31. Mary Beth, you've made a number of references to your connections to military.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband is retired military. You have two sons serving in the military. Talk to me about that and how that shapes your campaign.
Well, I think it shapes the campaign in a variety of ways. My district includes Fort Hood, the biggest Army installation in the country, in the world, American Army installation. And I have a strong connection with the voters in my district, particularly Bell County. I lived on Fort Hood twice in housing as an Army wife when my husband was on active duty. I understand what's important to the military. I have a son serving in Iraq, so I understand how important the issues are for training and equipment, supplies. I have friends currently working on Fort Hood, employed by civilian contractors, and funding to just keep the lights on for Fort Hood. It's a big issue right now. This war has been dragging on for how many years? Fort Hood's critical to winning, if that's possible, the war in Iraq. And they don't even know if they can keep their lights on post right now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because there was just an article about there being a hiring freeze for civilian workers at Fort Hood. What happened to Fort Hood's funding? I mean, as you say, it's the biggest military installation. It has, two active battalions. How in the world did this happen?
It appears to just be like Hurricane Katrina. It's incompetence, lack of leadership, lack of planning, poor coordination. The current incumbent for my district, District 31, got up a couple of weeks ago at a farewell for a 3-star general who was leaving Fort Hood, and said he had no, prior to being elected to this district in 2004, he had no knowledge of the military, never served in the military, never worked with the military, never knew anybody in the military, and he sure appreciated this general helping him with his learning curve. Well, we really, when we're fighting folks in Afghanistan and we're fighting folks in Iraq and we're deploying the National Guard to the border, we really can't afford Congress people who have a learning curve when it comes to the military issues. And so that's the problem. We have people on the Hill who want to send folks off to war, but apparently don't think about what it's going to take to pay for the supplies, the equipment, the training, the housing, the civilian contractors that have to work at Fort Hood. It's lack of leadership, lack of vision, and just downright incompetence.
Another story that came out recently was that the Veterans Administration apparently had a laptop stolen that had personal information of, a couple million veterans on it. How does that happen, and what do we do about it?
Well, it's just stunning that someone could take that kind of information out of their office. It was not encrypted. It was not secure. Apparently, they haven't found the laptop, and certainly not the information. I mean, that touches home. My husband's retired military. All his information and my information could conceivably be, sitting on that laptop. So it's going to could potentially cause tremendous problems for a lot of folks that I know that my husband served with that are still friends of ours. You have no choice but to just periodically check your credit report.
There's a bill pending that's been proposed, or a bill proposed by Senator Harkin that would require the federal government, the VA, to provide for free some credit checks for people who might be affected by this for a couple of years. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think that is a good idea. The problem is he probably won't get a lot of support for it. I think the one thing that this administration and this Congress has shown repeatedly is a fundamental lack of respect or concern for our soldiers and our veterans. And honestly, 14 months ago when I made the decision to run for office, that's what prompted it. You know, we're very proud of the military tradition that I married into. My husband's dad retired as a command sergeant major after 30 years in the Army. He fought in World War II. He was a tunnel rat in the Pacific. My husband, he always knew he would be an Army man, and he did 23 years. Both my boys followed their dad into the military. They can't think of anything they'd rather do than serve their country in uniform. And it's so painfully obvious that the executive, the president, and all the folks who work for him, everybody in the military knows that these civilians at the top have never served, well, with the exception possibly of Rumsfeld, and that they don't understand their dedication. They don't understand the duty. They don't understand the sacrifice. They give a lot of lip service to supporting the troops, and then, you know, they take deferments or they don't complete their National Guard duty. Military people aren't stupid. They see what's going on. They understand that they're in a war in Afghanistan that still hasn't been finished. They understand that they're in this war that's about a civil war in Baghdad, and that they have no conceivable way out, because nobody's... I mean, I have friends who serve at battalion level and corps level, and they're going to briefings, and they're not being told how they're getting out of this, and they're very concerned.
Where do you think we need to go in Iraq? What's the next step? What do we do?
Well, you know what? We need to get people like me and some other terrific congressional candidates here in Texas. We have, and digress for a second, we got folks like Charlie Thompson, retired naval aviator, Dan Dodd, retired Air Force pilot, and I'm probably forgetting others, but I know those two fellas personally. I have tremendous respect for them. We need people who have either served in harm's way, or people like me who have lived with folks who are putting their lives on the line, and because of that experience, want to make sure that if it is necessary to go to war, that the war is properly prosecuted, and that sacrifice and dedication is respected. And so we're there now. You know, everybody knows how we got there, why we're there, and what we need to do now is to get new people into Congress like me who have the desire, the will, the vision to say, okay, first of all, we really need to go back to our traditional allies and have a truly peacekeeping coalition, because, you know, we won the war. You know, essentially we have. Saddam Hussein's on trial, the Iraqi army was defeated. And so what we need to do now is get a truly peacekeeping coalition in there to fight the insurgents, win the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, and then at the same time have these benchmarks, because we can't keep our soldiers over there to referee a civil war. So we have to have benchmarks for the Iraqi government. And if they're unable or incapable of meeting those benchmarks, then we'll have to rethink the strategy. But the goal is to force the Iraqi government to take responsibility for their own country, their own army, their own people, and for us to pull our troops out as soon as possible, and then keep a presence in the region, that's important, but take our troops out and get the UN back in. You know, and if that takes a little humility on the part of this administration, then that's what needs to be done.
The next step, therefore, is do we need to set a timetable, or do we need to just sort of make it up as we go along? And it seems like there's no good answers.
Well, no. If you talk in terms of timetables, then the Republicans want to accuse you of cut and running. And, you know, fact of the matter is, I would never agree with a policy in Iraq that's either going to shame my husband, who did 23 years in the Army, or squander my son's service in Iraq right now, okay? We have to come up with... It's a difficult problem to solve, but the first goal is to have the will to solve it. And the problem is this Congress has done no oversight with this administration. They haven't proposed anything. They just kind of, you know, the fellow I'm running against has repeatedly called this war a success. And when the administration says we're going to be there for years, he's fine with that. And then he'll turn around and call somebody like Jack Murtha a coward. So, yeah, it's very, very difficult. There's no easy answers. The beginning is to set benchmarks for the Iraqi government, to go back to the UN and truly build a peacekeeping coalition. And yeah, that's going to take a lot of work because we've alienated our allies on this issue. But I think with a democratically controlled Congress, we could bring credibility back to the process. We could bring, when we approach the UN on the Iraqi issue again with a democratically controlled Congress, we would have a new credibility and a new voice coming forward on foreign policy with our traditional allies, which will make a huge difference.
Let's shift gears for a little bit. Congressman Carter, the incumbent you're running against, was recently down on the border. He's been talking about illegal immigration. What do you think needs to be done in terms of border patrol, border security, and immigration?
I think the Republicans want to make immigration a new wedge issue, so probably every Republican congressman in Texas is down on the border grandstanding. Yeah, I think actually the solution is to some extent really simple. We have to enforce the current laws that we have. Texas Monthly had a terrific article in the May issue, and it was about a program they've got going on in Eagle Pass, and that got my interest for two reasons. My son-in-law is from a big Mexican-American family down in Eagle Pass, and the federal judge sitting right down there right now, Judge Green, I know him. He used to I used to practice federal law on Fort Hood, and he was the federal magistrate on Fort Hood. But at any rate, it's real simple. They got together, they put a little more money in the pot. Border Patrol, INS, DPS, and local law enforcement in Eagle Pass are actually stopping these people as they illegally cross the border. Instead of capturing and releasing the illegals, what they do is they stop them, they arrest them, they detain them, they put them in the local county jail. Within 72 hours, they see that federal magistrate, Judge Green. They actually have an interpreter, and they have a court-appointed attorney. And they get caught red-handed, so they're convicted. The judge explains next time you come across, you're looking at serious prison time. They fly them or bus them back to wherever they came from. And in the last year, illegal crossings at Eagle Pass has been cut by more than 50%. And it's very cost effective. And the reason this hasn't been done in the past is because local county government was very afraid that the jails would get choked real quick and that it would be a huge financial burden on the county. But the feds put a little more money into the pot and they came up with this program, and it's really worked well. It's worked well for the country. It's worked well for Eagle Pass. It's worked well for Texas. Their only exception is if like moms are coming across with their kids, they don't incarcerate the moms. You know, they find another way to get them back to where they came from. And not only does this make sense on a humanitarian level, but it also makes sense because once you get CPS involved and all the foster care issues and all the potential health issues and whatnot, then it becomes a real financial burden on the state and the local community. So it's a solution that really makes sense. You know, I heard someone saying at the convention we ought to be building bridges instead of building walls, and I really agree with that. I think a wall is an insane misuse of our tax dollars. It really is. And they're going to build an 800-mile wall on a 1,600-mile border. That's ridiculous. And I know I'm going a little long on this, but the other thing that we need to do, and I haven't heard any of these Republicans talking about this, is we really need to bring some heat on the Mexican government enforcing their side of the border. And we also need to bring heat on these Central American governments like Guatemala, who need to bring economic changes to their own countries, you know, jobs, housing, whatever it takes, so that these people will want to stay in their own countries. Because they come here and they ship the money back home anyway. And they'd rather stay in their own country, except coming... It's sad that it's actually better for them to come here, work for pennies on the dollar, and live in squalid conditions, and that's still better than where they came from.
Do you support a path to citizenship of some type for the 12 million or so?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm against amnesty. I'm just against it. Yeah, they did something illegal when they crossed the border. We have to have some kind of earned citizenship. It only makes sense. Having said that, let me tell you that my biggest concern about having 12 million people in this country and turning around and bringing them into the workplace is we haven't had an increase in minimum wage in like 11 years, and we don't have a living wage in this country. And I think only 11% of workers in this country have a union membership. And I think the desire of some folks who favor some kind of legalization of the 12 million illegals is to really just finally bust the back of unions in this country and to make any discussion of minimum wage a dead issue for another 10 years. Because once those people are in this country legal, then they're willing to pay work for whatever low wages are available legally, it's just going to keep wages low, and it's going to continue to hurt unions.
Shifting gears one more time, there was a recent story about some controversy over some stock holdings that Congressman Carter has. He's apparently a big stockholder in Exxon,
mm-hmm.
and your contention is that he's profiting off of the high gas prices lately. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know how that all came up is I had this enterprising student who contacted me and said he had a look-see at my opponent's financial disclosure on the Federal Elections website. And my opponent owns somewhere between $1 million and $5 million worth of Exxon stock. I mean, anybody could see it. It never dawned on me to look. So this kid tells me, and I look at it, and I'm like, yeah, that's true. And but, you know, I don't really know where... Well, Carter decides to hold a press conference at a Shell oil station to talk about the high price of gas. This is probably a month ago. And sort of commiserating with our pain at the pump, supposedly. And then talking about things like, geez, we need to go back to offshore drilling off of the coast of Florida and California, and we need to go back to coal, burning coal, and we need to go back to nuclear energy. Well, if you talk to Jeb Bush doesn't want, and neither does Arnold, neither one of them want drilling off the coast of their states. We still don't know how to safely dispose of the nuclear waste and spent fuel from nuclear energy, and nobody wants a coal-burning plant in their backyard. But all of that aside, what happened was Channel 6 up in my area, the local affiliate, covered Carter's press conference, and they came to me and said, well, we'd like to get your sound bite, which I thought was nice of them. And I said, well, I find it hard to believe Carter feels our pain at the pump when every time somebody buys a gallon of gas at the ExxonMobil station, his stock portfolio increases. Well, I went back to Carter's camp, and he admitted he owned the stock. He said he inherited it all from his dad, who apparently worked for Exxon. But it really, you know, okay, that doesn't really matter. What matters is he's still benefiting from his ownership of at least $1 million worth of ExxonMobil stock. And I thought it was just kind of ridiculous for him to hold a press conference at a Shell station under those circumstances. Plus, I went back and looked at his voting record. He voted, right before he had this press conference, he voted against taxing his own stock dividends. There was a Democratic initiative to start taxing big oil stock dividends, to close tax loopholes for big oil, and to impose a windfall profits tax, which could have helped in the research of alternative energy sources. And he voted against all of those. And so, yeah, I think there's an apparent conflict of interest here, especially when he gets up at a press conference he stages and basically reiterates Big Oil's talking points, not making us any more independent from fossil fuels. And he voted to drill in Anwar, which again, it's just more fossil fuel energy. And we, best of my knowledge, we won't see the gas out of Anwar for 10 years out of Alaska. So yeah, we need hydrogen. We need research into hydrogen. And you know the other thing, real quick, is we've invested $10 billion in subsidies to big oil. We have given $10 billion of our tax money to big oil over the last 5 or 10 years. Because that's, in return, they're supposed to do research and give us cleaner burning fuels or alternative fuels. Well, first thing I'm going to do when I get to Congress is ask for an audit. I'm going to bring these big oil execs up on Capitol Hill. I'm going to put them under oath. I'm going to ask them what they did with our money, because we haven't gotten any return on that investment. And we need hydrogen. We need flex fuel cars. We need ethanol. We only have 5 E85 gas stations in Texas. And apparently you can make ethanol from sugarcane, which Brazil understands. Ford Motor Company's manufacturing flex fuel cars for South America, where folks can either fill up with E85 or fossil fuels. We don't even have those on the market in this country because we don't have the gas stations that will give you either one. So, I mean, I think it's just very typical of the way this Congress serves big interests, special interests, powerful, greedy corporate interests, and then they're, you know, they've got the gall to go stage a press conference at a local gas station. I mean, it's just it's insulting and it's offensive, and I think most folks have caught on now and they're really tired of it.
Mary Beth Harrell, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.
Hey, Charles.
Good luck with your campaign.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Yeah.